welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth, and special guest, Jamie Loxton.
Hooray!
This week, we're talking about... But first... A wee YouTube comment. Shall we read the YouTube comment of the month? I think we shall. It says, I came over from Spotify to YouTube just to write this comment saying I'm gay. Well, thank you very much for coming over from Spotify to YouTube to say that you're gay. And speaking of coming over from Spotify to YouTube, if you are listening on Apple or Spotify or anywhere else, come over to YouTube, get into the comments and answer this question. The question is, do you have tinnitus?
It's tinnitus. Ah, I thought you were talking about ecstasy. No.
Yes. Yeah, oh. It might be why I'm here.
Oh, well, fantastic. What luck.
How convenient.
So, I mean, I guess the first thing that we're going to start this episode off with is, what is tinnitus? What is tinnitus? Or tinnitus, whichever way you want to pronounce it. What is it?
Because I have it. It feels easier for me to answer.
That is okay.
So I want to leave it to you to see what you might think it is.
Okay. You want to embarrass
yes,
Luke,
yeah,
and then you will come with the real answer. There we go.
It is a sort of constant ringing in the ears, which is not caused by any sort of external thing. And it's probably very annoying and won't go away.
That is almost entirely wrong, but mostly right.
Well, that's weird. See, I was going to agree with that.
It is right, but it's technically wrong on a number of levels. And I would have given that definition before I researched this earlier. So, you know, that's what people think it is, but it's a little bit more, I guess, nuanced and complex than that.
Is it the little gnomes in your ears singing a sad song?
You know what? Sure.
I can promise it would be way less annoying if it was.
So tinnitus or tinnitus, again, you can pronounce it either way. It's not a disease, much like being gay. Luke, what is it?
It's a symptom.
Well done.
Just like being gay.
Not going to explain that one. You need to watch all of Sci Guys to understand it. But yeah, no, it is a symptom that something's wrong with your hearing, essentially, your sort of auditory system, your auditory processing, all of that sort of stuff. And obviously the auditory system includes the ear, the sort of the hearing nerves, all of that part of your brain, right? It's not just your ears, it's everything that takes the sound, makes it into a signal that you can read and understand, and then processes all of it, right? It's that whole sort of system there. It's pretty common as a condition, and yeah, you're right, Luke, in saying that it is sort of characterized by that sort of hearing or perception of a sound that isn't apparent to others, but it's not always a sound that doesn't have a sort of, let's say, I mean, okay, it doesn't always have an external source, but there is sometimes a source outside of, like, the ears or the brain. You know what I mean? We'll get into that in a little second. It's usually described as a ringing in the ears, but it can sound like a lot of different things. It could be hissing, chirping, crickets, whooshing, roaring sounds, humming, throbbing, music, or singing. It can affect one or both ears. And the NHS says that you could even have it in your head. Like, I think they mean it sounds like it's coming from in your head, or it's just in your head and you don't hear it in your ears.
I can do this weird thing with my jaw where I, like, move my jaw in a certain way and I just get, like, I've been able to do it since I was a child. So that's like in my head.
You can turn your tinnitus on and off.
Yeah. Seriously.
That I don't know. That could be related to tinnitus. Well, you'll understand in a sec. It's usually broken down into two types. Do either of you know what the two types might be?
The type I have and then the type other people have. The type I don't have. That's going to be my guess.
I mean, you know what? Unfortunately, you are correct.
Yeah. So
there's subjective and objective, although those are kind of, it seems to be old terms, and it's more commonly sort of spoken as rhythmic and non-rhythmic, which will make more sense when you understand what both of those are, which you will in a second. So you also said, Luke, that you hear it all the time.
Ah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can come and go. I mean, why don't you talk about your experience?
I have had tinnitus for basically as long as I can remember. I would say it probably comes anywhere between that sort of ringing and hissing sound would be the one I have. It's very close to that sort of very high pitched, but it can change that sound. Like, that is generally how it always is. But, you know, sometimes a more throbbing sound can come in. Sometimes a more, like, echoey sound can come in. But I've had it for long enough that I don't know of any specific event that caused it. I don't remember what silence sound like.
Oh my gosh.
I can't ever think of a time where I've heard silence. I'm sure I have, but I've had it for long enough that I just can't, I can't picture what silence is.
And does it bother you a lot?
Yeah, so that's what is quite interesting about tinnitus in general, is because, as you say, it is, I don't want to use the word just because that sounds like it diminishes it, but it is just ringing. That's all it actually is. But what causes such distress for most people is it causes mental health issues because it, as you say, it can be quite distressing. Mine is nowhere near as bad as it can be for others. This is something I wanted to ask you about, whether there's any research into whether it's hereditary, because my uncle has it, my dad has it, and my great uncle all have it. Now, that could just be coincidence, but we all have it to different degrees. And so mine can go away for a while, but it's not going away, because the way to deal with it is to tune it out, basically. Yeah. You're just not... you're not realizing it's there. I can think, oh, I haven't felt my tinnitus for a while. The second I have that thought, it comes right back. So, you know, talking about it for an hour on a podcast might really make it very present in your brain.
We're going to have a good day after this.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really funny, because I used to have this experience where I was struggling to get to sleep for a little while once, and I would put on white noise on a speaker, and I would wake up every morning and I'd go, why is my white noise stopped playing anymore? And then instantly, amazing how your brain can tune stuff like that out.
As far as I'm aware, one of the best ways of treating it, or like there's very few ways they know properly to treat it or cure it, but is to get a little hearing aid that essentially plays that noise. Like they you go through a bunch of tests trying to identify the frequency, and it plays that noise and trains your brain to be like, oh yeah, that's just a noise that is always there, so I don't need to, I can tune it out.
It's not relevant information. That's what's mad to me about brains, is that, you know, you can have something that you're perceiving that you just don't perceive anymore. Like smell fatigue, for example. If you smell a smell for long enough, you don't smell the smell anymore. That's why when you go into someone's house and it smells funky, and you're like, how do they live? They don't smell it. Because they live in that smell.
Is that related to the idea of when you say the same word over and over again and it stops sounding like a word?
That's probably... somewhat similar, I guess.
That your brain has stopped perceiving it in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you sort of, what's the word, saturate your brain with something, saturate yourself with something, you kind of have to switch off to it to an extent, because it's no longer relevant information. Although I don't know about the word thing. You'd have to ask someone that studies linguistics, I guess. There's probably like a million linguistics papers written on that one.
Very specific phenomenon.
Yeah, but no, I mean, with back to sort of tinnitus. Yeah, I mean, you said it can come and go. It can be different in sort of its intensity for, depending on different people. And you might think that the loudness of the noise or the sort of, you know, frequency of it coming and going might have a strong correlation with how, you know, how bad it is for people. But that's not really the case. You can have someone that's got really, really loud sort of tinnitus, really loud noise in their ears that isn't terribly bothered by it. And I mean, you're right in saying that it seems like it's just a noise. It's not that much, but it is just this constant thing. And it can cause very, very serious sort of mental distress because it's distracting, or it's not necessarily painful, but it's, you know, there's always a noise there. It's just, it's weighing on your mind and you can't get rid of it.
I have anxiety anyway. So like, it's not specifically caused by the tinnitus, but when it gets most mentally distressing is like nighttime, trying to get sleep. Like I listen to podcasts when I go to sleep simply because I need something. And it doesn't work with music for some reason, because my brain almost tunes out the music and tunes into the tinnitus. Because it knows that like, oh, you're trying to trick me. I know what I want to focus on. Whereas a podcast, like it's just enough activity for my brain that like I can tune into that, but still fall asleep. But when it's really loud at night, it, like your thoughts start to go to, well, it's just never going to go away, is it? Like, it's never going to go away. And the fact that there is such... there's, like, some research, which I'm sure you get into, in ways in which it can be cured, but it's not concrete at the moment at all.
Yeah, actually, I mean, before we get into the treatment, I'll say now, it actually can't be cured. There's no cure for it. There's treatment, definitely, to help manage, I guess, the symptom, but there's no specific cure. And I guess, while we're on sort of the topic of being able to tune things in and out, and that whole sort of aspect to it, I think it's really interesting because, I mean, I'm pretty sure I probably have tinnitus, like very intermittent, like every now and then there is a ringing in my ears and it's just like, oh, okay, here we go. And it's probably because I've just damaged my ears from loud noises a lot, right? But on top of that, there's this other thing that I get, which is I can hear things so well sometimes and it winds me up. Like, you know, do you know the noise of like an extension cord? the noise that that makes when you've got things plugged into it?
Oh, yeah, like an electrical buzz.
Are you neurodivergent, Jamie?
No, not as far as I'm aware.
Clearly not, because basically, look, anyone I know that's neurodivergent understands the feeling of, like, hearing an electrical buzzing as well. Like, I can just, sometimes I just tune into that, and it could be a light across the room, it could be an extension cord sitting nearby.
Yeah.
They all have, this hum. And it's similar, I guess, to the experience that I've got of that sort of, like, ringing in my ears that doesn't have an external source. But it's so hard to tune yourself out of it, because sometimes automatically your brain will just decide to tune into it, you know?
Tell you what, I once went to California where it is legal to purchase marijuana, and I got more high than I wanted to be. And I could suddenly hear all the, like, plugs in the room, or like the electrical noise of the refrigerator, like everything that we're talking about filtering things out, right? All the stuff that your brain is filtering out. And I realized, like, oh my God, even like the lights in the ceiling, it's all so noisy.
They're very loud.
And our brain is just quite good at tuning it out. Like, if you get like a noise meter and you actually just like have it in a room, there's a load more background noise all the time, everywhere, just like city in the distance, cars, and your brain just is brilliant at tuning most of it out most of the time. But if you get the right strain of bad stuff in Los Angeles, my God, can you hear it all?
Yeah. I mean, you'll probably have experienced this through editing sort of podcast episodes, yeah, right? I mean, I need to specifically edit out the background audio. And, you know, sometimes it works quite well, sometimes it doesn't work as well. You need to literally take a sample of the audio of the room so that this sort of, I guess, sort of program can remove it for you. And if you think about it, those programs that are doing it, they're quite good at it, but also they're not nearly as good as your brain, it seems. Yeah. Because, like, I when I'm just in a room, usually I'm not picking up on those individual noises. Sometimes I am and I can't switch it off, but most of the time I'm not. I'm just tuning it out. But when I'm listening back and I'm just listening to the silence of the room through, you know, like through these headphones when I'm editing this podcast, I can hear so much. There is so much background noise that needs to be removed. I mean, I can literally hear it right now through the headphones. Like, there's just this faint, like,
before any audio geeks come at Corey, we know that some of that is created by the microphone
and the
amplifier and all those other things as well.
Oh, no, no.
So shush.
I know, but there is also background noise.
I mean, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you can hear London back here.
See, I can't.
You can't hear. You can. Oh, my gosh.
All I can hear is the tinnitus. The tinnitus is over all that background noise for me.
Oh, wow.
It's that loud?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because, like, sorry. Wow.
I mean, the background noise in this room is not great for a podcast recording, but it is kind of loud. Mm, there's a fair bit of, like, noises here and there. But, like, yeah, no, I mean, like, it's mental how, you know, for you specifically, this thing that is literally just in your head, it's not really there.
Yeah.
It so affects your perception of the world. Like, the two of us, we're sitting here like, yes, I can hear all of these noises. And you're like, all I can hear is the ee.
Yeah, pretty much. I saw a philosopher.
That's why he's so
scary.
That is why he is so anxious. He's constantly thinking about coming after him, right?
Just thinking I'm in the kitchen in Jurassic Park.
Always behind you.
But let's talk about the two different types. So I spoke about the subjective and objective, right? And I mean, and how they're not, that's not really generally what they're called. It's rhythmic and non-rhythmic.
I'm excited for this because I genuinely have no clue what these terms mean. I have no clue which one I have.
Honestly, neither did I. I think we know which one you've got. It's going to become very apparent. So subjective tinnitus, it's the most common one. And and I'm just going to read this verbatim. It's defined as a sound that is audible only to the person with tinnitus. So it's purely just a phenomenon within your brain or within your sort of audio nerves that is creating the perception of this noise that is not there, right? Like, I could, you know, I could put a microphone inside your head and I wouldn't hear this noise. Yeah. I could put it anywhere I want and I wouldn't pick up on it because the noise doesn't exist. You're making it up in your noggin.
Can I ask a quick question? So I know you're saying, like, if I put a microphone in your head, I couldn't find it. But are there types of tinnitus that are generated by, like, even like one of those tiny little bones in your head is just like just slightly vibrating, or like an electrical signal is crossing from one place to another place? I'm doing it.
So objective tinnitus.
Yeah, I was going to assume it's what he's about to say.
Okay, sorry.
Subjective tinnitus or non-rhythmic tinnitus is the most common one. It's the one where it's all in your head.
Yeah.
Just get over it. It's all in your head.
No, silly me.
It's purely just created, you know, through this sort of electrochemical processes in your brain, creating a subjective experience of a noise. Because your brain is crazy and good at making you think things are there when it isn't. Oh boy, isn't that terrifying? Doesn't that have terrifying implications for
everything?
You know, your entire perception of reality. Don't freak out, it's all fine. Anyway, objective tinnitus is much less terrifying, although maybe slightly more viscerally horrifying in a sense. Again, this is the one that is more commonly now referred to as rhythmic tinnitus, and that is an actual sound that has an objective source, and it generally that sort of it says a mechanical defect or a specific sort of sound source that could potentially be heard by an outside observer, but it's also really difficult to hear these sounds because a lot of the cases it's just a sound from inside your body that you're hearing. So like, do you know how, can you ever hear your heartbeat in your head?
Yeah, if you stay really still, you can hear your heartbeat.
Right, and can you ever hear, you know, you can hear yourself chew and you can hear yourself swallow. Sometimes that really drives me nuts, hearing myself chew and swallow. Very rarely, but sometimes.
Wait, you sometimes can't hear
yourself. I can hear it, but sometimes it drives me nuts when I do hear it.
I was going to say there were times where you couldn't hear yourself chew.
I can hear it, but like, yeah, sometimes I can, it's almost all I can hear, it's overwhelming. But, you know, you can hear like different noises in your body, all of that sort of stuff, right? Now, in some cases, you can have disorders that affect your blood vessels or your muscles, and then you can pick that up from your ears, like from the noises that it's making inside your body. And you can hear that, and it's this. It can be sort of a more rhythmic sound, obviously, because it's moving with the rhythm of sort of, let's say, your heartbeat or something, right?
Like John Sims' character in Doctor Who, the drum guy.
I mean, although that wouldn't be rhythmic tinnitus.
Right. Yeah. So, is the way a doctor tests for that? They like just go around your body with a microphone, just trying to find where it's coming from.
Look, this is the issue. I mean, I literally have something here that says, however, a diagnosis of objective tinnitus is tied to how hard and well the objective outside listener tries to hear the sound in question. Right. So if you like, you could get a diagnosis of, you know, subjective or non-rhythmic tinnitus, when actually it's rhythmic and the doctor was just like, oh, I can't be bothered with this anymore. All right, just can't hear. Yeah, so I mean, it does kind of come down to how well they can find it. And, you know, it's less, I don't know if it's so much sticking a microphone in it.
So you're not saying I just need to find a really saucy doctor.
Yeah, I feel like it's more looking for a mechanical issue that's related to that, right?
Time for an endoscopy.
But now it's becoming apparent, I suppose, that tinnitus itself is a symptom and not a disease.
Right.
Right? Because
the idea of you having a noise inside your body and some signal being generated in your brain, they're like totally different things. Like,
yeah,
totally different
but
things.
They have the same, I guess, subjective experience of, I can hear a noise and that is bothering me to no end. I mean, and you know, we can get onto the, we've already kind of started talking about the causes, but we can get onto them in a little bit more depth. So, I mean, what do you think is, like, I mean, what sort of causes are there for tinnitus?
Well, if I were to assume it by what makes my tinnitus worse, loud things, loud activities. And do you know what activities are loud? All the fun ones.
Yeah. Modern society is pretty loud. I mean, the causes could be anything from, you know, hearing damage, as we've said, to a bit of earwax in your ear.
Yes, when I went to the NHS about it, they did have a look at my ears. Apparently, that she said they're the cleanest ears she's ever seen. Which was actually such a sad thing to learn. I was really hoping she was going to go in, well, no, wow, those things are really messed up in there.
Your problem is you're just bloody disgusting. Your ear hygiene sucks. No. Yeah, I mean, it could be something like earwax in your ear canal, but noise-induced hearing loss, diseases of the heart or blood vessels, like as we've mentioned, you know, there. And just to kind of hop on what you were asking about, you know, how it could be diagnosed, if it's in time with the beat of your heart, then you could probably tell, oh, it's probably to do with the heart, right? There's something called Meniere's disease. It's French and it's got accents. It'll be in the description somewhere, okay? brain tumors, hormonal changes. It says in women, so hormonal changes in people assigned female at birth could cause tinnitus. Thyroid abnormalities, ear and sinus infections. Sort of all of these things could cause sort of persistent noise in the ears that is not apparent to an outside observer, generally, right? So there's a number of different causes because it's just a symptom. And it's often the first sign of hearing loss when you're getting older. So if,
when I'm getting older,
in the elderly,
okay, so
in the elderly.
I'm fine. I'm young enough that I'm under 30. This is just normal tinnitus.
I don't know. speak to your doctor.
I did. She just said how clean it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's also drugs that could cause tinnitus. I mean, I've got here it literally says more than 200 drugs are known to cause tinnitus when you start or stop taking them.
I've done very few drugs.
Prescribed drugs, one would assume.
Cool.
And maybe if you did enough, it would go away.
No, in your experience, it would just make it louder.
Oh, that's marijuana.
No, that was real fridges. That was real things.
You need to do the opposite of marijuana, which is, I guess, cocaine?
You need to boof it.
Right, Luke, would you like to explain to our audience what that means?
I think it means putting up your bum. So if you smoke marijuana with your bum, maybe all the sound will go away.
I hesitate to ask.
Yeah.
But where does the term boof come from? Well, what is the etymology of that term?
I think Corey's about to tell us.
I'm not. But what I will say is, Luke, it really sounds like you're blowing smoke up Jamie's arse. Ah! Anyway, let's move on. So, no, I mean, the causes are, as we said, like hearing loss, hearing damage, and all of these other things, which means that the people that are at risk are people that work in noisy environments and whatnot. You know, factory construction workers, podcasters, musicians.
I did have a question about that, about if there's been any studies into, considering so many people use headphones or earphones so much more in the last sort of 2 decades than they would have previously, has there been a noted increase in tinnitus diagnosis?
You know, I'm not too sure of that. I think diagnosis, prevalence probably. I'm not too sure about the diagnosis of it, but one could assume maybe, but then you've got to consider these sort of factory jobs have also kind of gone down as headphone usage has gone up. But yeah, personal headphone usage is kind of something that we don't think about, because generally people think that, oh, if I don't feel like my ears are in pain, then my ears are fine, which isn't really the case. I've got a little sort of segment at the end sort of discussing ear health, how to take care of your ears, because it is something that's very much related to this and it is quite important. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I don't know whether the increase of personal headphone usage would have counteracted or necessarily affected the decrease in sort of factory
workers.
Yeah, general sort of factory workers, right? Or safety precautions there.
That my dad going, oh, back in my day, we got tinnitus from hard tools.
Well, yeah, but one of the main things that's brought up in a number of places, and this will show you how old one of these studies is, it says that one of the major disabilities related to, you know, military service is tinnitus, specifically for people returning from Iraq or Afghanistan. Yeah. So, you know, like, I mean, and this is mentioned in a number of places, that if you join the military, there's a solid chance you get tinnitus because it's bloody loud.
It's also probably the most prevalent time you ever see symptoms of tinnitus on screen is in like war movies. Mm. Like after an explosion, they'll recreate that sort of ringing sound.
If you actually watch Archer, which is a fantastic television show, like this animated show that's been running for God, maybe 13 years now?
Yeah, very long time.
Bloody brilliant show, right? The character is a secret agent, and they play with realism in a lot of fun ways. But one of the ways that they do that is he has guns being fired next to his ears when he's not wearing ear like protection all the time. And constantly he's complaining about his tinnitus because, of course, you'd get tinnitus from being in that environment. And yeah, I mean, like there aren't many representations of tinnitus in the media, but that is one that I find, yeah, that's a pretty good one, because it pretty much encapsulates what this specific kind of tinnitus is very much like, right? But sort of moving back on to more of the causes. I mean, you know, that sort of non-rhythmic tinnitus, which we've covered, which is essentially just hearing loss or hearing damage generally. But, you know, the rhythmic tinnitus can be caused by so many different things. As I said, like blood vessel disorders, but you could have your blood vessels weakened from, I'm just reading this verbatim here, blood vessels could be weakened from damage caused by hardening of the arteries. So atherosclerosis could cause tinnitus, which is not something you think about, right? You wouldn't think that, oh yeah, I have heart disease, or I've got, like, you know, hardened arteries, that's what's causing the ringing in my ears. But it literally can. Human bodies are so weird.
It's funny you say that on bodies being connected. Tinnitus is one of various different mild ailments I have, one of which is back pain. And so I've seen a osteopath for that. And she was doing an exercise that was like stretching she was holding down my leg and trying to make me push up against it. And we were trying to figure out where the imbalance in my body might be. And she stuck her finger in my mouth and like grabbed onto the like jaw there. And then I was way better at lifting my leg up. And I have no clue why. And then she stopped, and I couldn't do the exercise the same way.
Yeah, one of my mates studies osteopathy, and so does his dad, so does his entire family, right? Are kind of osteopaths. And it's one of those things that kind of sounds, I guess, a little bit pseudosciencey. I've not specifically sort of looked into it. But from what I've heard from him and them and people that have gone to see them, it's insane how much it works, because they do a lot of studying of the body. They all practice on each other whilst they're learning this. Like, it is really mad how it works. We should probably do an entire episode on osteopathy, to be honest.
I would love that, actually. Yeah, my wife is obsessed with osteopathy. She's always gone to osteopath, and she has this thing where, like, if I massage her in her back, she like feels it in her jaw.
Yeah,
like, so bizarre.
Body's weirdly connected.
Yeah, I wonder if it's to do with like the fact that, you know, you have like all your nerves ultimately end up on your brain, like in the same way that people have foot fetishes, because the area that deals with feet, or like one of the theories is the area that deals with feet in the brain is right next to the area that deals with genitals. So like the way your body is mapped out in your brain, in like the homunculus, is like, I can't remember the exact order, but something like head, neck, arms, hands, chest, legs, feet, genitals. So genitals are mapped not in the same, your body's not mapped in the same order as you would scan it from top to bottom. And so, like, if you can get electrical signals crossed over there, then you might start having a fetish for feet because it's near the area that deals with your genitals. One theory.
I halfway through that realized you meant, like, controlling your own genitals, not just deals with the concept of genitals. There's, like, a portion of your brain, like, that's where I think about genitals. This is my part of the brain where I think about genitals.
It's most of your brain, is it not? No, but I mean, this is what's really interesting, I think, that just your body, people think of the body as being a complete thing. It is, but also it isn't. It's come through evolution, right? And it's just adding a lot of stuff on top of other stuff that's already kind of working, and maybe a few things, getting rid of a few things here and there. But it's not like planning a city, you know, from scratch. It's more like, you know, it's not like an American city, your body. It's more like London, where there are little windy roads that go nowhere, and this road doesn't make any sense, and wait, why is it quicker to go this way rather than this seemingly more direct way?
And we have pipes now, but all the towns are next to the rivers.
Yeah.
Because we didn't. I used to have pipes.
Exactly. Exactly. And like so, so many things that just don't... Okay, right. For example, if you were to, you know, look at London today and not know that it had been built however long ago, you know, back ages and ages ago, before all of these things come about, you didn't know when, you know, say plumbing had been invented, when sort of central heating had been invented, when the ways that we build houses, all of those things had been invented. If you came and looked at London now, knowing, you know, all of the modern technology, you'd be like, who the hell designed this?
An idiot made this city. Yeah,
a fool designed this, right? And the body is kind of the same, because in the sense that, yeah, okay, there are all these sort of adaptations and things that have been evolved, but they've had to build on things from the, like, you know, previous things, which is potentially why you get weird things in the brain, weird ways that, you know, your nerves work. I mean, because realistically, right, the way that your body is built, just, it kind of sucks, right? The human eye, it's not very good. Like, at all. It is a very poor way of seeing things.
Tell that to the Christians.
I will, and I do. Look, if you believe that God made all of this from scratch, you believe that your God is a bit dumb when it comes to building things.
Is my tinnitus actually just God just going, ee, in my ear?
He's trying to send you a message, buddy.
Mess with me. I'm not interpreting it well.
Absolutely not. But what we can talk about a little bit is sort of neurological element of it. Because, I mean, you know, obviously there's rhythmic, non-rhythmic. Rhythmic would be from something happening in your body. The non-rhythmic is the one that you've got that kind of doesn't have any apparent source that, you know, would obviously be sort of neurological to an extent. And yeah, it's essentially the idea here is that there's sort of networks in your brain, right? And they process and understand sort of all of the sounds that are coming in and try and, you know, figure them out and turn that into what you hear. Because when you think about it, when you're listening to just noise, you are picking out all of those individual things in the same sense that when I'm looking around this room, I'm not just seeing colors of light and, you know, differences in lightness and darkness. I am processing it and making sense of it. You know, I'm looking at you and I'm seeing Jamie and I'm seeing microphone in front of you. I'm seeing glass on table. I'm seeing sound panels behind you. And I don't need to think about any of that. It's all just happening in the background, right? The same happens when you're listening to stuff, right? You're picking out, you know, oh, that there's that noise, oh, there's this noise, and you're tuning out all the things that don't really matter and, you know, trying to understand the things that you know, your brain thinks do matter.
Is that functionally the difference between hearing something and listening to something? Like, hearing, would that be literally just the sound enters and hits your eardrums, and then listening would be interpreting it?
Yes. I mean, I don't know if that's a sort of, I guess, technical definition, but I mean, the separation there, yeah, I mean, colloquially, that's kind of what we're getting at.
I actually wondered why this is, or one reason as to why it could be that you prefer listening to podcasts than listening to music, because when you listen to music, you don't really listen to the lyrics.
No.
It's a listening experience rather than an understanding experience. And then listening to podcasts is like, you're actually doing a different task to listening.
Yeah.
Does that ring true?
Yeah, absolutely. It is engaging my brain just that little bit more that helps me tune out the tinnitus, basically. Mm.
There's also probably something there that if you are listening to a podcast, generally you're probably going to be listening to a new episode of a podcast that you haven't listened to before. Mm. So while it's familiar enough that I recognize all of these voices, all of this sort of the flow of the episode, you're not listening to the same song that you've listened to already. You listen to the same episodes of podcast.
I listen. So,
amazing.
Much to my girlfriend's absolute chagrin, there is one podcast that is only about 20 minutes long. There's only 20 episodes of it. And so it is those ones over and over again because my brain is familiar enough with it. But I also fall asleep a lot quicker than my girlfriend does.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'll stay awake a little bit longer and I'll be like, wow, is this how this podcast ends? And she's like, yes, I've heard it so many times. And I've just heard the first like 3 minutes.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, back to the sort of neurological explanation there. So we were talking about these sort of networks in your brain that process audio information that makes sense of it, right? And, you know, there's no sort of agreed upon, there's no consensus on this. I'm not saying this is definitively how this works, but there are some sort of ideas that how this sort of works is that when there's hearing loss, you know, there's damage to your sort of ears, there's hearing loss there. The tinnitus is your brain almost trying to make sense of the sound that isn't there, that makes sense of the sort of the signal that's coming in from the damage. You make sense of whatever signals are being sent, right? So when there's, I guess, say, damage to these sort of hair cells in your ears that send the vibrations through, you know, into your brain, your brain's like, well, I'm getting something here. I'm not really getting something here. And it just kind of says, okay, this must be what it is. I guess, I mean, in a sort of, to use a sort of analogy, I'm not being literal here, you could think of this as being somewhat similar to, I guess, phantom limb syndrome. Phantom limb being, if you sort of say have an amputee, if you chop off their arm, they will sometimes feel as though they've got a pain in their arm that has been like cut off, right? And that can come from, you know, the nerves still sort of being there and sending signals, and your brain interpreting that being like, oh, well, my arm hurts, and your brain still hasn't learned. Well, no brain, no arm gone. And similarly, you could think of this as if you have damage to your hearing, there could still be signals being sent, or there's a lack of signals being sent, and your brain doesn't really know how to deal with that. So it's just like, hey, Jamie.
It sounds
the best I've got, man. I can't figure out anything else. That's all I've got.
It sounds similar to that thing. I don't know whether it's true, but the thing I heard about, like, if you go to like a loud concert or something, and you get an amount of hearing damage, and then you have a ringing in your ears the next day, that's like, I mean, it was said in like a quite romantic terms of like, that's the last swan song or whatever the word is for that frequency, and you're like, whatever cell, whatever hair or whatever, like, part of your brain, part of your ear hears that frequency, you're not going to hear that again because that died. But maybe that's not true.
I don't think that's true. I mean, I don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how hearing damage actually works, right?
So if you go to one concert over and over again, eventually it'll tune out all of the frequencies. You'll have just done all of those sounds.
Yeah, I think the ringing in your ears comes from that sort of hearing damage, where it's more neurological than it is necessarily a physical thing. Maybe it is that one specific frequency that's been knocked out, but I don't know if that actually is the case. I didn't see anything that said sort of specifically that. So it also says that tinnitus could come down to sort of interaction between different sort of neural, I guess, systems or circuits in your brain interacting with each other in sort of the wrong way. What it says here is that, you know, the neural circuits involved in hearing aren't solely dedicated to processing sound. They also communicate with other parts of the brain, such as the limbic region, which regulates mood and emotion. So this sort of tinnitus, it's not necessarily just as simple as hearing damage means you're hearing a ringing in your ears. Your brain is way more complex than that. And sometimes it can just, you know, through for want of a better phrase, crossed wires and slight damage. It can cause a subjective experience that isn't objectively actually there.
Out of interest, this might be a dumb thing to say, but so you were talking about how you have tinnitus and that can cause mental health things because, and the description, the explanation you gave for that is because it's bloody annoying.
Yeah.
It's annoying to have tinnitus. But you also talked about, Corey, you talked about how the area of the brain that deals with sound also then might end up going to the area that deals with mood and emotion. And so is it possible that like this signal that is going on in the brain that is sort of unhelpful in many people is it's actually the signals going to the mood and emotion part and is sort of antagonizing that in some way and also is creating the tinnitus. So rather than it going... signal creates annoying sound creates sadness. Its signal creates both sadness and annoying sound.
That sounds like a lovely idea. Maybe. I don't... Maybe?
Yeah.
I'm not going to necessarily rule... I have nothing that says that that's the case. But
yeah.
Maybe. Look,
such a scientist.
What I'm saying is almost anything can happen with a brain, right?
Why can't the bit that's generating annoying sound go to the bit that deals with mood and emotion and just make you really happy all the time? Just like, wee! Oh, wow, such a good time. I'm really vibing with this. Wee!
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
Hark, the ad bell, he does sing.
He sings for Patreon, I think. If you head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a whole host of cool things. What can they get, Luke?
Oh, bloomin' heck. They can get so many things. There's bonus episodes. You can request topics for episodes. There's an entire other show called After Dark where we discuss sort of philosophical things and just general discussion, the kind of stuff that you imagine we talk about after we've finished recording. Well, that is when we do it, so that is what we do. And lots of other stuff. What else is there?
You get your name at the end of every single SciGuys episode. You can also vote on topics. You get to choose what we do. And at the end of the episode that's voted on by our patrons, if it's your first month being a patron, you get thanked by name. By us, the SciGuys. Isn't that fun?
That is really fun. I'll use my vocal cords to say your name with a 50% probability because Corey says half of them.
That's very true. So head to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. So let's talk about the diagnosis of tinnitus. It's one of those things, obviously, you know, when it comes to, I guess, subjective tinnitus. You need to take someone's word for it because you can't just get inside their head and hear what they're hearing. That's the entire point of it.
But J.K. Rowling is quaking.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
Tinnitus self-ID.
So you gotta go through this sort of clinical evaluation and you have this sort of testing of your ears and your hearing and whatnot. I mean, have you been diagnosed?
Yes, technically, I guess. I went to the NHS and they had a look in my ears. They checked a couple other things. It's, again, I said I have lots of mild ailments. I also have mild IBS. And it was very similar with that, where it's like, they don't really say you have IBS. They just rule out all the other things it couldn't be.
Mm. Yeah, like they will have to rule out other, I guess, causes of this thing. It's one of those things, like you go with a symptom that is sort of unprovable. And in majority of cases, they just send you away like, okay, I guess you've got this.
Yeah.
And there is some treatment available, which we'll get into in a sec. But yeah, it's a really sort of awkward thing to deal with because what really can we do other than, I mean, guess try to help you tune it out, you know, unless it's the sort of rhythmic one that does have a more objective source within your body, which can just go away by itself.
But I suppose like that there is actually, now that you said that, it never occurred to me, but now you said that, there's actually an awful lot of stuff like that, especially in mental health, where they just sort of trust you because, like, you know, you do a depression questionnaire and you say how you feel. They don't go in and probe your serotonin levels or look at, like, actually how quickly your muscles are moving, which is one of the very odd diagnostic criteria for depression, is like, I'm moving more slowly. They don't actually observe much of that stuff for real. They just ask you and they ask the people around you, I suppose.
Because it'd be, for one thing, it'd be impractical to do that. And for another thing, I don't know if we've really sort of characterized it such that all of these things directly indicate... You could measure someone's serotonin levels.
No, we already know that doesn't... Yeah,
exactly. No. It wouldn't work. So you need to take it essentially on what someone's telling you their symptoms are.
At least with tinnitus, why would someone lie about it? Right? Like, where's the benefit in that?
They want hearing aids on the NHS. I mean, literally, the treatment for this is, it's the classic of, we don't have any cure. This is just a symptom. It's to help you deal with the symptoms. So the NHS says, try to relax. Deep breathing or yoga may help. Try to find ways to improve your sleep, such as sticking to a bedtime routine or cutting down on caffeine. Try to avoid things that make tinnitus worse, such as stress or loud background noises. Just basically don't live life in modern society. Try self-help books or self-help. Here's the treatment from the NHS. Try and help yourself.
Help yourself. And also, I can say, don't try yoga, because yoga is all about being in silence and like meditation. When I was at drama school, we did loads of like meditation exercises, and didn't help at all, because all I'm sitting there thinking is, well, this makes my tinnitus way louder.
No, exactly. So, I mean, and that's kind of the point, when it comes to treatment. Generally, what they'll try to do is you have these devices that aren't hearing aids, but they're worn like hearing aids, and they just kind of, they just basically play white noise, like at a sort of low level, to sort of drown out, I guess to an extent, drown out the sound and suppress the tinnitus sound. And, you know, a hearing aid could sometimes be used to do the same sort of thing. And bear in mind that tinnitus can be tied to hearing loss. That can be the cause of this symptom. So to treat the tinnitus, you sort of, I guess, treat the hearing loss, right? I mean, there's also other kind of therapies which involve, you know, it's called TRT, tinnitus retraining therapy, which essentially tries to decrease your perception of the noise by sort of, I guess, I think it's sort of gradually playing, sort of trying to figure out what that noise is and trying to build up, I guess, a resistance to it so that you start to tune it out more. And you can also listen to, apparently it says, some people that with tinnitus may find relief by listening to background sounds that they find pleasant. For example, ocean surf. So essentially, you know, when it comes to the non-rhythmic tinnitus, the sort of more subjective tinnitus, you gotta just try to tune it out, or, you know, get a hearing. Basically, all of these things are tune it out, or get something to play over it, because you don't know where it's coming from. It's just in your brain, right?
Yeah, it is basically figure out what works for you. And like with me, it is, I have not figured that out, but also sometimes it just kind of gets less bad. And like, I try to avoid listening to loud things. Like, I occasionally play online video games, specifically shooters. Oof. And if I play that with headphones, oh, it's so bad for days. And so I just have to avoid doing stuff like that. I don't go to concerts super often because it makes it worse. Mm-hmm. So it is really a management rather than a treatment.
Now talking about it, I probably do have hearing damage and tinnitus, because sometimes I'm just sitting about and I'll just get a in my ears. And if I go to a concert, like, my ears can ring for, if I don't protect my ears properly, I've literally had them ring for like 3 days after tour. Goodness me, was I?
I'm really sorry to have introduced you to the fact you might have tinnitus.
You gave him tinnitus. Why did you do that?
I've known for some time. I just haven't really. Upon looking at this, I was like, oh, I guess I do fit that, like, you know, the criteria for this symptom. Because I used to think, I guess, that it was just a constant thing rather than potentially an intermittent thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is literally just if you're hearing consistently a noise that you don't have any apparent source for, that's pretty much tinnitus, right? But I think we should probably talk about how to protect your hearing, you know, after having spoken about all of this. And we can talk about the treatment for rhythmic tinnitus is to just treat whatever is causing the noise in your body. And in a lot of cases, it can just go away on its own. But let's talk about how to protect your hearing. So we usually measure noise using decibels, which essentially kind of it kind of aligns with the sensitivity of your ears to different noises. So I'm just going to read out a list of examples here so you can understand sort of the scale here. 0 decibels is the quietest sound that a healthy human ear can hear. 140 decibels is the level at which noise causes pain for most people, but some people might find lower levels painful too. About 40 decibels is a quiet library. 60 is ordinary spoken conversation. 85 is a blender. 88 is heavy traffic. 91 would be a pneumatic drill. 97 would be an industrial fire alarm. A nightclub sits at about 100 decibels. And then a live gig or a concert usually sits at 110. And, you know, if you've got someone out front, that's basically, you've got someone that's mixing the audio and, you know, telling you what you hear, often they'll have a little microphone that just sort of, or, you know, a little sort of device that sort of is measuring how loud it is. I mean, a a bunch of different places will have rules on how loud you're allowed to have it based on, you know, the sort of regulations that they've got for that building and for that area. 130 decibels would be an airplane taking off 100 meters away. So, I mean, think about standing 100 meters from an airplane as it takes off. I mean, they're pretty loud. And as I said, 140 would be where it causes pain for most people.
150 is the Jubilee line going around a corner.
Don't even. Honestly. I need to wear noise-cancelling headphones on the Jubilee line.
Yeah.
It's just, it's too much.
I hate to bring it back. There's something that really... Zero is not no noise. It is very specifically... That annoys me as a... Why zero
because
not
this scale. So this scale is based on human hearing.
Are you annoyed by the fact that 0 degrees is not no heat?
Well, it depends
if you're in Kelvin. Yeah, okay.
There is a specific measurement to that, and that can go into the negatives. Sound can't go into the negatives. They can't take sound back out of my ears.
Oh, can it not?
Well, my point with decibels is that it's based on human hearing, right? So this is the same thing for Celsius is used for something different that Fahrenheit is used for generally, and Fahrenheit's used for something different than Kelvin. Kelvin is used for science when you want to measure from absolute zero.
So can decibels go into the negatives for like animals that have more sensitive hearing than us and the sounds they can hear?
I suppose degrees Celsius goes to negative 273 and it doesn't actually go any lower than that. So theoretically, yes, like Celsius, you could have a negative decibel and a lowest number of negative decibels is like degrees 273.
Then you get to whatever no sound is.
You can have negative decibels, but that just means that it's sort of below. And bear in mind, you could probably tell from this scale that it's logarithmic, right? It's not a linear scale. Yeah. Mm. And so negative decibels are sounds that are below the sort of general what humans, the quiet sound that a human ear can hear, right? So I guess it's weird to think about it as, because we're thinking about it as an absolute. Generally, when you think about measurements, you're thinking about them as absolutes. This one is not. This one is based off of an arbitrary reference point, which is human hearing, because that's what it's made for, you know, and that's what it's useful in that sense. There are other ways to measure the volume of sounds or, you know, sort of sound pressure. Mm. But this is the one we use for human hearing because it's specifically made to... It's specifically built around human hearing, right?
This might sound like a silly question, but I'm not a scientist. So sounds... I vaguely understand that they're waves. What makes a sound louder physically? Like what scientifically is a louder sound versus a quieter sound?
So when we're measuring waves, it would be the amplitude. But when it comes to the actual sort of sound waves in the air, look, I mean, I know you know this.
So what that would be the pressure, a pressure per unit of space.
Yeah.
Which is part of the definition of pressure.
Helpful. The definition that defines itself. Yeah.
So sound waves are sort of changes in, I guess, air pressure, right? That's how those waves propagate, right? And the sort of pressure, the level of the pressure that's hitting your eardrums, that would be the amplitude. I mean, if it's hitting with a higher pressure, that is sort of more force over... So pressure is force over area. So your eardrum is a consistent area. Mm. So when we say something is louder, that means it's essentially hitting your eardrum with more force, right? And that would be a louder sound because sounds are just waves in air, just vibrations in the air, which is just changes in air pressure hitting your eardrums. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And if it makes sense to me, I'm sure it makes sense to your audience because I'm a dum-dum.
So we've kind of spoken about the different levels of sound and, you know, we've spoken about how that can damage your ears. 85 decibels is about the threshold for, you know, above that, you're probably going to start to get some hearing damage over time. If you listen to sounds under 85 decibels, they're safe to listen to and you won't need to protect your ears. But if it's going sort of above that, then you can start getting hearing damage. But obviously the exposure time counts. Can kind of think of it like radiation, right?
Why do you think that's easier? Why do you think about radiation is easier than sound?
I don't know, because I guess because I've like looked into radiation, how it affects people. I did it in physics in high school. I don't know. My point is that it's not just the intensity, it's also the sort of time that you've got to, the sort of like the time that you're exposed to it. I mean, it says here that the sound intensity doubles with every increase of 3 decibels. As I said, it's a logarithm scale. It's not linear. So every 3 decibels, that is double the intensity of sound. Jesus. Yeah, no, exactly. And so, you know, heavy traffic doesn't doesn't apparently sound as twice as loud as a food blender, but it is twice as intense. And, you know, the exposure time, the safe exposure time, will obviously decrease as the intensity of the sound increases. So apparently, for 85 decibels, that's up to 8 hours a day. And you're exposed to a lot of different sounds, it says, that are 85 decibels or over throughout the day. And all of that time adds up, which is why I'm talking about it like radiation. Like, you can go and get, you know, sort of a chest x-ray, or you can get x-ray from the dentist and stuff, but all that radiation exposure adds up, and it can still cause damage. Sound, we kind of think of it in the same way, that if you have exposure to sort of sounds over a certain amount, that all will add up to cause sort of hearing damage. And apparently it says after 15 minutes of a nightclub, you're at risk of hearing damage. So if you go in for longer than 15 minutes, you can damage your ears. Yeah, and that's if you're not... so that's obviously
this
if you're not
wearing...
This is
why I always leave after 49 minutes. On the dot.
1, 5, 15.
Oh, oh wow, you've got triple hearing damage.
Yeah. And it's there's also, I find it says that there's an easy way to tell if a noise is too loud, because it's hard to tell when sounds are too loud, because if you're feeling pain... your ears are already damaged.
It's too late.
But one sort of easy test is if you're talking to someone, you know, who's about up to 6 feet away, you know, 2 meters away, and you have to raise your voice or shout for them to hear you, it's too loud. It's probably going to damage your ears, right? Mm. Not the shouting, the noise that you're trying to shout over. And, you know, you can get things that measure sort of the decibel level on your phone and whatnot. But again, those are not going to be super accurate. Generally, it's probably a good idea to understand the safe sound levels. You know, I think iPhones now tell you if the sound levels are dangerously high through your headphones and whatnot. Mm. You should probably try and pay attention to that stuff, because, you know, it's not something, tinnitus isn't something that, you know, necessarily will always come on gradually. Sometimes it can just come on suddenly. And damaging your ears, it's not a joke. You should kind of play it safe.
So what you're saying is, me and the boys go down the nightclub, stand in a 2 meter radius circle, all try to talk to someone at the opposite end, do that for 13 minutes and then leave.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sweet. Spot on. Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty much everything I want to talk about with regards to tinnitus. I mean, very briefly, I'll just touch on why there isn't a cure and why we can't necessarily find a cure. And the main thing is just that, I mean, you think about it, it's a symptom for one thing. And also, there's not an objective way to understand the severity or, you know, or any factor, really, when it comes to sort of the person that's experiencing it. You've just got to go on what they say. And for one person, they could say, oh, it's really intense, it's really, really loud. But that same level of sound could feel less loud to someone else. You know, it's very subjective, and so it's very hard to study it in that sense, and it's also then very hard to treat it consistently. We don't know why some people develop tinnitus and some don't. There are so many conditions that are associated with tinnitus, because again, it's a symptom, not a sort of disorder in and of itself. It's a very complex thing to study, because it's very much based on perception and not so much on things that can be more objectively measured.
One thing I wonder if you've ever heard about, which I've done, I did a little bit of research on a while ago, because I used to be very depressed and I was looking into sort of alternative mental health treatments, one of which is now becoming mainstream. And also, I remember seeing a lot of anecdotal evidence in forums and stuff about it working for tinnitus.
Okay.
Have you ever heard about people taking magic mushrooms for tinnitus?
I have.
Right.
I have heard of this. Unfortunately, I know myself well enough that I think the damage of just taking the mushrooms one time would probably outweigh the positives of potentially curing tinnitus.
Now, I got rid of the ringing, but also I had a horrible trip, and now I have to reevaluate my entire life. So, yeah, no, that is really interesting, though, because, I mean, what you're touching on there, I guess, Luke, is that this kind of comes down to perception. And psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, is a hallucinogen, which obviously is something that influences the subjective, I guess, perception, you know, that's going on in your brain.
Well, the stuff I've read about in terms of how it works is, I've read about it in terms of, like, it also helped someone with a stutter. Mm. It helped someone hear who hadn't heard for quite a long time. And what I understand, I mean, obviously, anecdotal stuff.
Yeah.
I don't, like, the studies.
So you're saying don't just immediately leave, go down, find a guy.
Yeah. No, but basically, the way that I understand it to work is that what it does is it increases the ability of areas of your brain that don't normally talk to each other to talk to each other. And that's why you get things like the hallucinations and synesthesia, like the crossing of different senses, because basically pathways in the brain that are normally cut off from each other or down, like sort of, what's the word? Not downregulated, but suppressed, right? Are amplified or at least allowed to talk to each other in a different way. And what can happen, as far as I understand it, is that when you then come back, like when you come down from that, your brain, like the order of the signals going around your brain can settle into a different way, into a different order than the way it did before. And so if you've got an area of the brain that's either generating like an electrical, obviously it would only work for the ones that are generated inside head.
Yeah. Non-rhythmic.
If you've got some area of the brain that's generating some kind of electrical signal and that is crossing over an auditory nerve or it's ending up in some area of the brain that deals with sound, you could resettle back into a way where that's not happening anymore. And either the signal's not being generated or it's just the circuit's changed. Now, obviously, I'm talking here about the brain in like an electrical circuit,
yeah.
Which I don't know if that's totally accurate.
But neither do I, so you're fine.
But that's the sort of my sort of very layman's understanding of seeing like subjective. And also, we've done a bunch of psychedelic research. We've done a bunch of research into psychedelics for Side Guys. Like we've done lots of reading.
Psychedelic research, man.
No, but it's interesting.
I mean, just look at Corey's. If you're listening and get to the YouTube channel, look at Corey's shirt here.
I'm wearing this for look. I mean, he's loving the visuals he's getting from this.
No, to be fair, it would be a hell of a podcast if we all took mushrooms and by the end it had cured my
tinnitus.
Oh,
my God.
But I think what's interesting about this is that if we look at the sort of drugs that have been sort of trialed for this, they've not necessarily worked, they can't be reproduced later, and they work about as well as placebos, which is interesting because, you know, a placebo generally only works for something that can be influenced by the body to an extent, right? Something that's more subjective than it is a literal objective thing. Mm. You're not necessarily going to get rid of your cancer based on a placebo, but you'll maybe get rid of, say, what is it? Sort of some sort of psychosomatic issue, right? Now, if tinnitus is caused by like these sort of neurochemical issues in the brain, electrochemical issues in the brain, you could see that a placebo might actually affect that, considering that a lot of it is based on perception and you might start to tune it out a little bit more. I mean, I'm not saying that the psilocybin, the magic mushrooms there, are placebos, but what I'm saying is that when it comes to perception, it gets really, really difficult because, I mean, we tend to think of, you know, the reality that we experience as being objective, right? What you see with your, you know, seeing is believing. That whole concept essentially can only work if you think that what you see, what you hear, what you smell, taste, all of these things that you sense are objective representations of reality. Tinnitus is just one of those things that shows you, nah. Your brain's just making up, is not making stuff up, but it's just interpreting all the stuff that's being sent to it, and you're understanding that, and you have no real way of delineating between what is there necessarily and what isn't. That's why, you know, these two realistically very different things of rhythmic and non-rhythmic tinnitus are classed under the same thing, because until you go in and try and like figure out, okay, well, where is this rhythmic noise coming from? They are the same experience, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's why, like, when my tinnitus gets better, it's because I'm not thinking about my tinnitus regularly. And obviously that's a little bit of a, like, a don't think about an elephant. What are you thinking about now?
I'm thinking about a rhinoceros, actually.
Oh, that's... Well, I'm thinking about connection.
I'm thinking about tinnitus.
But, like, it's obviously very difficult to convince yourself to not think about something because that's counterintuitive, but that is the best way of doing it. The best way of tuning out is... just do it.
Yeah.
That's my recommendation. Just do it. Just stop thinking about it, idiot.
Yeah. Obviously, for people, there's different levels of intensity.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Again, when it comes down to something that is based on perception, it's just really bloody difficult to have sort of set, treatments or a cure or whatnot, because it is something that's subjective. It's going to be different between different people. You can't be as objective as scientists usually try to be when trying to tackle this problem. But I think that's a pretty good place to end it. That's everything that we're going to talk about with regards to tinnitus for today. And there's only one more thing left to do. It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun, dun, dun,
yeah,
dun.
I was worried about it. Actually, no, I feel less stressed because sometimes you have like actual experts on this show and so they really need to get this.
Excuse me.
I just have this. I'm not an expert on tinnitus.
Quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins. What do you win, Luke?
Tinnitus. Only for a day. A little guest tinnitus.
Really hope you don't win this.
Wait, so yes, if I win it, it will go away in a day.
Yes.
Amazing.
You win some magic mushrooms.
So, Luke, what is your buzzer? Quite long and triggering. Jamie, what's your buzzer?
Just an
Very good. So the question for you both today is, what are the two types of tinnitus? Ooh, Luke, what is the answer?
Rhythmic and non-rhythmic tinnitus.
Ding, 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 that is correct. You win some tinnitus. Here Woo! It is. Goodness me. Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to Exact producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And want to leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamie P. Loxton. Also, I have a podcast called Blank Spank where we chronologically reviewed Tom Hanks' entire IMDb and then Anne Hathaway's entire IMDb. Corey has been on twice to talk about The Simpsons. It's a waste of his talents.
It absolutely isn't. And if you've not listened to those already, you can go listen to them now, along with all of the other episodes. Okay, goodbye!
Bye!
Bye!